Rice has been cultivated for at least 7,000 years, and it currently sustains more than half the world population. Rice is adaptable to numerous climates, terrains, cultures. In fact, rice is cultivated in every continent except Antarctica. Consequently, there are thousands of strains of rice today. In addition, it can be used with other, raised with other crops and food sources, and it encourages biodiversity. Since wetland rice fields can be habitats for a wide range of things. In Arkansas, we have ducks and all kinds of other things. I had a problem with geese earlier in my field this year. But they also use it for crawfish in Louisiana. But worldwide, it can be used for aquatic organisms, and the potential to diversify food sources within these rice-based ecosystems is optimal. And I just wanted to point that out, because rice is a little different. It's a C3 grass, and it's grown aquatically. There are some upland rices, but really rice is a water-loving plant, and it does best if it's grown under a flooded condition. What kind of breeding progress have we had worldwide over the last 25 years? And I kind of kept this to 25 years. I've been at Arkansas a little longer than that, working in rice and variety development. But worldwide, hybrid rice has come on in the last 25 years. Currently, rough rice yields have increased worldwide from about 32,000 kilograms per hectare to 42,000 kilograms per hectare. And hectares have increased worldwide from about 144 million to 156 million hectares worldwide. So we are increasing the places that we're growing rice around the world, and we're increasing the yields worldwide. And if you look at this, you can see in the United States, which is the yellow line, we have a little bit higher yield per hectare than they do in a lot of the other countries I have here. But we don't have near the hectareage. We have about 1 million hectares in the U.S. total. If you look at China, though, they've increased 1,000 kilograms per hectare in the last 25 years. And I think that's important, because that's when they have about 30 million hectares that they grow in China, and they've needed that for their food sustainability. Worldwide, it's gone up about 1,000. And then if you look at India, they've gone up about 1,000. So that's very important. And India has about 44 million hectares of rice. So China has gone from 1976, when they had 135,000 hectares of hybrid rice at 34,000 kilograms per hectare to, or 3,400 kilograms per hectare, I'm sorry, to 1984, where they had 8 million hectares, or almost 9 million hectares of hybrid rice, and the yield of about 53.7 kilograms per hectare, 70. And then in 2001, where they had over half their hectareage in hybrid rice. And it's kind of stayed that way since 2001. But they've still kept increasing their yields in China. And if you look at the hybrids in other countries in Asia, Vietnam has about 600,000 hectares of hybrid rice. India, in 2003, had 280,000 hectares. Now, that's probably increasing now. There's a lot of interest in India in hybrid rice, and I think that should help increase their yields in the future. In the Philippines, they had 100,000 hectares, and as you can see, there are other countries there that also have been growing hybrid rice. What about breeding progress in the U.S.? Because I know a little bit more about that than I do about the world. In the United States, rice is growing in two areas. We have the southern region down through here, where we grow rice, and then we have the region out there in California. Go back. In the southern region, in the 1929 and in that area, we were mainly medium grain rice producers. And there was very little long grain, but that has changed over the decades. And now we are mainly long grain rice producers with very little medium grain. And California is the place where we grow medium grain rice. Arkansas has the largest hectareage of rice. We have about 45% of the hectareage that it's grown in the U.S. is grown in the state of Arkansas. And the other ones haven't changed a lot. We go up and down, and it depends on the price. It really depends on the market, what the farmers are going to grow that year. I have no idea what's going to happen next year because we're still trying to get rice out of the field this year. And this is very, very late. We've had rain. We just had 5 more inches of rain last week. And I think probably we're down to about 10% of the rice left in the field. Probably about 30 to 40% of the soybeans are still out in the field. There's still corn out in the field that should have been harvested back in September, August. So, I mean, it's really a bad year for the producers in our state this year. Our state average yields, California has very good yields. They have really peaked around the mid-90s, and they've gone up and down since then, and that depends a lot on, they had a little bit of a disease problem here with blast. It was a 1 or 2 year kind of wonder, and it's gone. Generally, they have the weather conditions out there are not conducive to having a problem with the blast problem, and if they can maintain their floods, they generally don't have a problem, even though they have very susceptible varieties. But they have high yield potential. They actually adopted hybrids back in the 70s, and are not hybrids, semi-dwarf varieties back in the 70s, and that's made a big difference. Semi-dwarf varieties have come on worldwide in rice, but in the southern region, we make up about 50 to 60% semi-dwarfs now. And you can see that in the southern region, we've just been kind of increasing in yield from around, Texas was about 5,500 kilograms. I have to stop and think. I'm not used to thinking in kilograms per hectare. Kilograms per hectare back in 1984, and they actually peaked out at 8,000 roughly kilograms per hectare. Arkansas back then was about 5,100, the same as Mississippi, Missouri, and Louisiana was down around 46. And so we've all been increasing fairly dramatically, about 2,500 to 3,000 kilograms per hectare over the last 25 years for state average yields. The rice industry really is a driving force for breeding objectives in Arkansas and in the whole South. And yield is a major objective for the industry. But we have to keep quality that's good. It has to fit the market classes of long, medium or short. The disease package is positive. If we get better blast resistance, better sheath blight tolerance, they like that, but it's not essential if they can control it with fungicides in the case of disease, or if they can control it with even flood management for blast. Earliness is positive, but not at the loss of any kind of yield. They don't want something just to be early. It has to have the high yield potential. And lodging resistance, of course, is very important. And you can get that either through stiff straw or short statured or semi-dwarf varieties. Our breeding objectives in the U.S. are generally yield, of course, higher yields. And that can be affected by plant type, whether it's more erect plant type, more erect leaves. The stain green yield and milling stability over environments is important, and some of the varieties we've released recently have more stability over the environments, and the hybrids tend to have more stability over environments. Then integration of high yield genes also from some of the wild species is being worked on. Quality, we need to maintain, when I say, or improve cooking quality, but generally it's a maintenance kind of thing. It has to fit certain quality characteristics. We have some varieties where we've increased grain length, and we have different lengths of long grains, and the reason to have a larger kernel is we use it in the parboil industry, and it gives that nice, big, long, light, fluffy cooking grain that a lot of people like and that they really like in Europe. We want to minimize chalkiness, and I should have a picture of that. I don't. It's just kind of a white kind of discoloration in the grain, and you have poor milling when you have chalky varieties. And of course, we are also looking at increasing product diversity. Stress resistance is important, even though it's not a driving force. We still work very hard on disease resistance, especially blast and some on sheath blight. And in Louisiana and other places, they're working, trying to find something with rice stink bug resistance. Abiotic cold tolerance is very important in California. Somewhat important in the southern region because we're trying to plant our rice varieties earlier, because if you can get them in the field in March, they tend to yield better, all of them. And then long term, we're kind of looking a little bit at drought tolerance and salt tolerance. Herbicide resistance, well, right now the only kind we have is a mutation with the Clearfield varieties. They're lines that have a mutation for that will tolerate ME, and the reason for this is to control red rice. Red rice is the same as white rice, except it has a red bran layer, and it's a weedy species, or it's a weed that grows out, and you can't kill it with any of the herbicides that we normally use in rice because it's rice. It won't hurt anybody, but it's not nice for marketing it because we can't get people to understand and think outside the box that, hey, the red won't make any difference. But sometimes it does have a little different quality characteristic. And of course, water conservation is also important. But these are our current objectives. They're not static, they're dynamic, they can change at any time. We try to get as much scientific research as we can to expand our knowledge, and we try to look at new problems as they come along, and what kind of effect this will have on our producers. And when the markets change, we have to look at things like that. And sometimes our program directions tend to shift, and we're not even aware that they're gonna shift, but all of a sudden they start shifting on us anyway. We're starting to look at hybrid breeding in the public programs. 25 years ago, in 1984, in the South, there were no semi-dwarf varieties. They were just catching on for the first time. California, like I said, already had semi-dwarfs. The Calrose 76 was the first really good one released out there in 1976. There were no hybrids released to producers in the U.S. There were no herbicide-resistant rice cultivars in the U.S. There were no marker-assisted selection programs in the breeding programs at that time. Anthraculture was just getting started. And in the southern region, it was kind of a new age of rice breeders. We were all embarking on our careers as state breeders rather than with the USDA. And I'm just here just a little bit of information on how our varieties have shifted. And if you look at this, in 2005, this is just recent. Gotta go back. Whoops, wrong direction. In 2005, 77% of the acreage in Arkansas was our traditional, I call them conventionals here, even though they're both semi-dwarfs and a little bit taller varieties. But they weren't ME or Clearfield varieties, they weren't hybrids. And this has slowly gone down so that by 2008 it was 56%. And the shift is that we're actually bringing in more Clearfield lines that they can grow in areas that have red rice, but they like the herbicide, so they're actually growing it in other areas as well. And you can see that by 2008, it went from 23% of the acres up to 44% of the acres. So there's a real shift. Now, the actual hybrid rice variety here, RTXL723, which is a Rice Tech line, was on 8.4% in 2007, back down to 1.3%. It really is not taking over the acreage, just a hybrid by itself. But the Clearfield ones are. The Clearfield hybrids have much higher yields than our pure line long grain hybrids that they're competing with. So from 1999 to the present, the private sector has released several hybrid varieties. I have them listed here for Rice Tech, and Bayer Crop Science has just recently gotten into the picture. They have a big hybrid breeding program over in India. Herbicide resistance, of course, our target control, as I said, is red rice. Transgenic rice, well, there's Liberty Link rice out there. It's been stopped a couple times. It's caused some problems in the industry. And no, we're not growing any commercially in the U.S. Monsanto looked at Roundup resistance, although I would say now that Roundup resistance would not be a good idea for rice because it's in all of the other crops that we grow in the South. And we're starting to have a lot of problems with weeds in those fields. There's a lot more resistance coming along on Roundup. And the mutation breeding for things like the ME rices, Pursuit, BASF has that program, and that's the Clearfield rices that Horizon Ag sells. And we'd like other mutations that are out there. I know the programs in Texas and Arkansas and Louisiana are looking at potential other things that might give us new mutations in the future. Because we're trying to figure out what we're going to use when we don't have these herbicides that we have now. Clearfield releases, most of them initially had been developed, of course, by Louisiana because they had all the patents. Arkansas has developed some. Go back. I keep hitting that. Arkansas has developed some. And then, of course, those that are the Clearfield hybrids. And the Clearfield hybrids, as I said, have higher yield potential than the regular pure line Clearfield lines at this point, but I'm sure that will be changing in the future. Over the last 25 years, biotechnology has gone from infancy to the point that we actually have routine programs in Texas, Louisiana, and Arkansas, where we actually screen routinely things in our breeding crosses for blast resistance, and we're looking at PITA, PIB, PIZ, PIK, and PI2 routinely. We also look at markers if we make crosses with something that doesn't have our traditional cooking quality with waxy alk aroma. And then we've got some work with yield genes trying to transgress the yield genes from the wild species into some a better germplasm background. And then, of course, our group is also characterizing new markers. And we have our own, we work with the USDA people. We're very fortunate at Stuttgart because they're right there and they have a lot of the equipment we need, but we have our own section that actually does our own marker-assisted work. Anthraculture, that came in, it's kind of gone away. In Arkansas, we had it from 1987 when we first started dabbling in it to having a really good program in the, from about 2002 to 2005, and then the person left and funding was tied and it just kind of died. California tried it, Louisiana did it. They're still doing a little, but they're using it mainly for bridging parents so that they can pull something in from unrelated germplasm and get it into something that's more adapted. Mississippi's never done it, neither has Missouri. Texas did it from 1989 to Texas A&M to 1997, and then Rice Tech has been doing some. I don't know how much they're doing, but Dr. Chu, who was doing some of the work in Louisiana with bridging, is now at Rice Tech, so I suspect they are still doing some as well. There have been some successes worldwide with the anthraculture, but nothing really stands out. In China, they have had some photosensitive male sterile restorer lines for the hybrid breeding programs. Erie and IEA, they've developed doubled haploid lines and one cultivar that's tolerant to submergence, drought, and salinity. The USDA breeding programs have developed the Coarse Calrose 76 photosensitive genetic male sterile, and they did release a variety Texmont from Texas. And then LSU, of course, as I said, is using it for bridging parents. But there have not been a lot of successes with it over all the years that we tried it. And then one of the major things I think that really affects our breeding program, and probably a lot of the breeding programs in a lot of crops, is we've gone from public releases and free trade of germplasm, sending it all over the world, getting it from all over the world, to these patented releases and detailed MTAs. I can't even take something that we release publicly now and send it to Erie without sending an MTA with it, even though it's in the World Collection and it's a public line. It never has a patent, doesn't have patent, PVP, anything, but you still have to have an MTA to send it overseas. Progress in breeding. Well, our background disease resistance has improved. We take a yield bump and we put in blast resistance and we take a yield jump and we try to put in blast resistance, so we kind of incrementally have bumped our way up. Our rough rice grain yields have improved. Milling yield has not changed. It's kept right where it was. In 1984, it was, and I've got it this way, but I think of 61.4% total or whole kernels. And in 2007, it was 61.4% whole kernels. And the range on that was only from, during the different years, from 58.8 to 62.2. And it just kind of fluctuates around there. So we haven't really made any advances as far as head rice yields in rice. But we haven't lost anything either. We're staying about the same, even though we've increased yield. And of course, our definition of long, medium, and short grain quality has remained unchanged over those years. Our conventional plants are shorter now than they used to be. When I came back in the early 80s, before 1984, Starbonnet and Labonnet were the major varieties growing in Arkansas. And Starbonnet was 132 centimeters tall on average for several years, and Labonnet was 123. Well, now our varieties, if you look at 2008, Wells, Francis are two of the major varieties that are traditional growing in Arkansas, and they're 102 to 100 centimeters. And even the Rice Tech hybrids, which are a little bit taller, are 110 centimeters. So we've made plants shorter. They don't lodge quite as easily as they used to, and the producers do appreciate this because they hate going through a field and having to pick up downed rice. Semi-dwarf cultivars really caught on in the South. They're 52% of the acreage. But because Arkansas has such a large percentage of the acreage, and there are a lot of producers in Arkansas that want taller varieties because they grow rice on a little bit of a hillside, they have several levees in their field, they want to be able to go over it with a combine, and if the rice is too short, when the combine comes over the levee, it misses some of the rice. So they want something a little bit taller. So that 100 centimeters, 39, I guess it's 39 inches, is really something they like. 36 to 34 inches they really prefer. 2004 was declared the International Year of Rice. And that was to celebrate the sequencing of the rice genome by the International Rice Genomic Sequencing Project. So we've had the rice genome sequenced for a while, and there's been a lot of work done around the country. And to make this genomic information a little bit more useful to breeders, the rice cap was born. And the purpose of the rice cap, and this was the project was supported by the USDA Cooperative State Research Education and Extension Service and the National Research Initiative Coordinated Agriculture Project, which is what the CAP stands for, on rice. And the purpose was to develop molecular markers that we could get to the breeders so that we could work with sheaf blight and milling quality. And both of these are quantitative traits and very hard to deal with. And we actually have made some progress with the sheaf blight, not as much with the milling quality. And also to show that genomics can be used to improve agriculture. And it really can be. And we look for a lot of that in the future. Okay, what about Arkansas? I can get a little more specific with Arkansas because this is actually, in a lot of cases, the data that I've worked with. 20 years ago, the rice breeding program was given a mission by the industry. We want 200 bushels by the year 2000. They wanted varieties that would routinely yield on different farmers' fields where they could get these yields of 10,800 kilograms per hectare. Well, Wells was released in 1999, and it pretty well reaches this goal, and so was Francis in 2002. And just to give you a little brag a little bit on Francis, this year one producer in southern Arkansas on a 50-acre field had 247 bushel per acre, which is over 12,000 kilograms per hectare. So these varieties are capable of giving high yields. This is data from the 2007 to 2009 Arkansas performance trials, and I wanted to show this to show the semi-dwarfs have not yielded quite as well in this Arkansas as some of the other varieties have. They yield about 8,000 kilograms per hectare. Francis and Wells are getting close to 9,000 kilograms per hectare. We just released something called Taggart, which is again right at 9,000 kilograms per hectare. It has a larger kernel for parboil, and that was the major reason it was released. That's, again, we've gotten a yield jump, and now we're trying to get all these other characteristics that we like in our rice varieties at that same yield potential. Jupiter and Bengal were the medium grains, and they're at about 8,500. And generally, you think of medium grains as having higher yield potential, but we've worked harder on the long grains in Arkansas. XL723 is the Rice Tech hybrid, and it's at 9,400 kilograms per hectare. And that's an experimental at the bottom that we have that we're real excited about, which has very sifted straw, does not lodge easily, has withstood up during some of the hurricanes that we had the last 2 years go through, and it has a yield potential of around 9,600 kilograms per hectare. So we feel in Arkansas that our breeding program, we still have progress that can be made. We are not there yet. And we get a lot of push, too, to get these things out. This just shows the average rice yield for Arkansas. And you can see we started out down around 5,000 kilograms per hectare, and we're now up to, we had our record here at 8,098 kilograms per hectare in 2007. It wasn't as good last year. It dropped back down to about 7,600 kilograms per hectare. And I know that it's going to drop this year because the weather conditions in Arkansas have not been very good. Well, if you actually looked at these things, I just looked at this a little differently, and I added this slide kind of late, but I thought it's kind of interesting to know what happened when we released some of these varieties. Well, this is the first year these things were out as certified seed. And in 1985, New Bonnet and Lamont were out at certified seed. So the producers had them. The New Bonnet was on 60% of the acreage. It had been released and it just took off like gangbusters because everybody wanted that variety that was going to yield a little bit better, and everybody wanted the one that was going to stand a little better than the Star Bonnet that they'd been growing in the past. And we had a yield bump that year of 700 kilograms per hectare. Katie was released in 91. It had blast resistance. It was on 13% of the acreage year it was released. We didn't have any yield bumps that year, but we did come out with something that we didn't lose any yield, and we had good blast resistance. Allen was released in 92, and it was on 20% of the acreage, and we again had a yield bump. Cypress came out in 95. It's a semi-dwarf. It was on 35% of the acreage that year. We didn't really see a yield bump that year from that variety, but it gave the producers in the southern part of the state that wanted to grow a semi-dwarf a very good semi-dwarf to grow. And one of the things about Cypress was it has extremely good milling quality. It gets it one of the best things for head rush yields. K-Bonnet was released in 86, 33% of the acreage. We had a 700, kilogram per hectare yield bump. K-Bonnet was a better yielding long grain with blast resistance. And we'd been having, I keep having trouble with that. What did I do? Where am I going? I went the wrong direction. I switched it somehow. I'm dangerous with these. Anyway, K-Bonnet was an improved Katie, and it had good blast resistance as well as good yield potential. Drew is released because it had a bigger kernel. They wanted something with a bigger kernel. It didn't yield bump anything, but it still had the good blast resistance. Cocodrie came in as a semi-dwarf in 2000. It had good yield potential. It was a better yielding semi-dwarf than Cypress, and it replaced Cypress. Wells came in 2001. We had a 300 bushel yield bump, 30% of the acreage. CL161 and Francis came in, and they took up about 24% of the acreage, and that's a clear field. That means we're actually getting management that's helping with this yield bump at 400, because we're growing rice where we had a problem with red rice, and we're getting yields off of those fields for the first time. So that was a benefit due to management, really. Wrong way now. Okay. Genetic gain in our program. I was really impressed with this when I got a chance to look at it because I had never thought about it. It looks much nicer in kilograms per hectare than it does in bushel per acre, too, so I like these numbers better. But we started out in 1986. Our baseline was New Bonnet in 1983. In 1986, we had a half of a kilogram per hectare yield increase that year due to our varieties. And this, by 1989, we had a 14.1 kilogram per hectare yield increase that year due to our varieties. And if you took this down, by 2007, we had a 95.3% yield increase in 2007 due to our varieties. We have been increasing our genetic gain. And I didn't really realize this till I got together with the statistician and economist, because we were trying to show our producers that yes, you are getting benefit out of your breeding program. And the cumulative genetic gain over this time, for all of those 25 years, is 1,052 kilograms per hectare. Now, what does that mean? Well, that means back in 1986, the producers got $8,000 more that year in Arkansas, all together in Arkansas, not any one producer, but all of them. Not a lot of gain monetarily, but by the time we got to 2007, they got $83 million, $854,969 more in 2007 than they had in the year previously, just that year, due to the improvement of our rice varieties. And I think that's kind of phenomenal. Of course, and 2007 was before the real increase in prices. Prices then were about $10 a hundredweight. And then they jumped the next year up to $13.50 a hundredweight. So if that had been the next year, they'd get even more. So in 2007, the Arkansas Rice Breeding Program contributed, as I said, $84 million roughly to the state. Well, to the whole southern region, it contributed $98,000, because some of our varieties are grown in Mississippi and Missouri and a little bit in Texas and Louisiana. In perspective, what does this mean? Well, it's not just the Rice Research Board, but the university and the board and everything, the investment in the rice breeding program, we had $1.47 million to work with. That includes pathologists, that includes cereal chemists, that includes our cereal quality lab, all of it, in 2007. And with that $98 million, that means they got a 1 to $67 return. For every dollar invested, they got $67 back. So I think that that's impressive and will help us with our impact on our board and things for them. They look at that. What's the economic impact? Over the past 25 years, if you add it all up, it's roughly $429 million to the Arkansas economy just due to the breeding program. And if you look at this, we're not getting that whole yield increase of 2,500 to 3,000 bushel. We can't attribute that all to the breeding program. I'd like to, but management and other things have made a big difference. And other breeding programs have made a difference. But we can probably claim about 38 to 40% of the increase. Another thing we have in the last 25 years is we have added the Dale Bumpers National Rice Research Center. It opened in 1989. Now, we've had a long history in rice working with USDA. We've had USDA people on the station at Stuttgart since the 1930s. Matter of fact, until 1981, the breeders were all USDA personnel. But we have now got the Dale Bumpers National Rice Research Center, and they have what they call the Genetic Stocks ARISA, GSOR, and it's a place where you can send mapping populations, and they also make marker data available online. So you can go on the web and get marker data on these mapping populations. They also have a rice core collection there that's been established, and that helps us too when we're looking for germplasm that might have something, and they have Dr. Wing Guiyan, who actually does germplasm enhancement as well. Future trends in rice, what are we going to do in the future? I think herbicide-resistant rice, if we can find more mutations, would be good. Transgenics, I'll get to that. We'll probably get there eventually. Interest in hybrid rice is increasing. Of course, we have two companies now, not just Ricetech, but Bayer, releasing varieties in the U.S. And the public breeding programs are trying to form a consortium to actually work on hybrid breeding. And the public breeding programs in Arkansas, Texas, and Louisiana are looking at hiring breeders to work in hybrid breeding. So we can develop public hybrid varieties. And like I said, currently there are no commercial transgenic lines available in the U.S., but transgenic rice is catching on in the world. Producers will use a transgenic rice when it's available, and they will want it immediately. So we as breeders have to work with, team up with people that aren't, we aren't growing it in the state, but team up with people so that we can have transgenic lines kind of on the shelf that can be increased when it gets to the point that we can actually grow them in the U.S. And I think that's coming because in China they're growing a lot more BT rice. In some of the other Asian countries, they're starting to grow more transgenic rice varieties. And as that rice becomes out in the marketplace, it will open it up for the U.S. to also have transgenics. What do I see about prognosis for the future? I don't know. We see lots of places where we can get 12,000 to 15,000 kilograms per hectare at an isolated location in a given year on a hybrid or on some of our better lines in our program. So I don't think we're there yet. I think there's a lot of untapped variability in rice that you may not see in other crops. We can make a cross between two pretty similar things and still get a lot of variability out, which is kind of exciting when you think about it. And management systems will also help increase our future yields because we know we have the yield potential there. We just need to be able to manage it better on larger acreages in some cases. Or like I said, take whatever that person did that got 247 bushel per acre in Francis this year and get it out to more locations. So in Arkansas, we not only have rice fields, but we have wonderful overwintering habitat for ducks, and we are the rice and duck capital of the world. Thank you.